We're leaving, no questions asked. The protectiveness in his voice sends shivers down my arms. I can work with that. Whose children does the royal nursery take care of? I ask as we make our way through the palace once more, on our way to that very nursery. It seems strange to me that these peculiar kids, as Galia put it, are right inside the castle in the very heart of the kingdom. Des clasps his hands behind his back.
The nursery takes care of children orphaned by warrior parents, our way of honoring their final sacrifice, children of nobility working in the palace, and of course any children of the royal family, including mine.
Yours? I echo. Why had I never considered the possibility Des might have children? A warrior king like him, he'd have no shortage of women. It's possible. Desmond peers over at me.
Does that bother you?
I shake my head, not meeting his gaze, even as my stomach twists. I can feel his eyes on me.
Truth,
he says.
How would you feel if I told you I had children?
The moment the question leaves his lips, his magic closes around my windpipe. I clutch my throat, glaring at him. Some warning would be nice, I rasp out. My windpipe constricts, not the response it wants. I feel the magic drag the words out, much like my magic dragged answers out of Galia. I would be jealous, I say. God, am I glad we're the only two people walking down this particular hallway. It's embarrassing enough to admit this to Des without having any additional audience.
Why?
He asks. The magic doesn't let up. I grit my teeth together, but it doesn't stop the answer from slipping out. Because I'm a horrible person. The magic squeezes harder. Not truthful enough, apparently. Because, I try again. I don't want anyone else to share that experience with you.
Why?
He presses. You've got to be kidding me. The magic's a noose around my neck. Because that's an experience I'd like to share with you, I rush to say. Immediately, my cheeks flush. The magic eases up, but just barely. Des's eyes soften.
You'd want to have my child?
Not anymore, I wheeze. But even now the magic senses I lie. It squeezes my windpipes, choking me. Yes, I hiss out. All at once the magic releases me, and I know several beads have just disappeared without even looking. I don't give a flying fuck. I'm seeing red. Des looks so pleased. Pleased and aroused.
We will be returning to this conversation, Cherub, he promises.
That's about the moment I pounce on him. He grunts as I push him against the wall and loop my arm around his neck. Oh, sweet baby Jesus, am I angry. He steps away from the wall, forcing me to lose my footing as he pries my arms off of his neck. Before I can attack him again, he pulls me in close, our torsos flush with one another. You had no right to do that, I say, whisper soft. Technically, he did have every right. That's what happens when you bargain with Des. He can take whatever he wants as repayment. His eyes move to my heated cheeks.
You're embarrassed.
Of course I'm embarrassed. Who wants to tell the guy that ripped her heart out that, hey boy, hey, I still want your babies? He runs a hand on my back.
You would not be so embarrassed if you knew my thoughts.
Now my breath catches.
Rest assured, Cherub,
he continues.
I don't have any children.
He pulls me closer, his lips brushing my ear.
Though I'm always willing to change that.
Now I try to pull away. Des, let me go.
He
says, his hand sliding down the back of one of my thighs.
I think not.
He loops it around his waist. I try to jerk my leg out of his grasp, but the effort is futile. He then wraps my other leg around his hips.
I like you right here.
Next time I fall for someone, it won't be a conniving, manipulative... His hand moves lower, cupping my ass. Horny, Fey King. Next time, it will be a good boy. I don't even want kids, I mutter. Des just smiles. Fairies. Then, naturally, someone chooses that moment to turn down the hall. The bargainer doesn't make a move to put me down. Instead, he begins walking with me, wrapped around him like a koala, nodding to the fey woman as we pass her. So awkward. It's not until we reach the double doors that lead to the nursery Des finally puts me down. In this section of the palace, it's unnaturally silent. I keep expecting to hear something. The young are always noisy.
I reach for one of the knobs. Before I can grab it, the bargainer catches my hand.
"Remember my words," he says. "Anything unusual happens, we're out of here."
I stare into those silver eyes, his chiseled features on edge. "I remember," I say. Shaking off his hand, I open the door. It's almost quieter inside the nursery than it is outside. Even the air here feels still, like everyone's holding their breaths. A lone servant fluffs the pillows of one of several ornate couches that rest in the sitting room. Beyond her, a set of French doors open up to a private courtyard. She startles when she sees us, dipping into a hasty curtsy.
"My king, my lady," she says, greeting each of us. "What an unexpected surprise."
"We're here to see the casket children,"
Des says brusquely. Casket children. What a morbid name for them.
"Oh."
Her eyes move between us.
Of course."
Do I detect unease?
She dips her head.
"Right this way." As we follow her down one of the side halls that branch off the common area, I notice she discreetly cracks her fingers one by one.
"They're fairly quiet at the moment."
Catatonic is what she means.
"We've had to separate them from the other children. There were complaints."
She doesn't finish her thought.
"Well, you know that already, my king."
"Complaints about what?" I ask. She takes a deep breath.
"That the children were feeding off the other children. We decided to move them. They don't prey on each other."
As we trail behind her, stepping over some glass toys and a lyre playing a cheerful tune, I give Des a what-the-fuck look. He raises an eyebrow and shakes his head, his expression dark. She stops at a door and knocks as she enters.
"Children, you have company."
The room we step into is cloaked in shadow, and none of the lit sconces seem to drive away the darkness. The far side of the room is made up of a wall of windows. Several children stand in front of them, staring out at the night beyond. Just like Galia said, none of them move a muscle. More lie on the row of beds pushed against the walls. I can't see inside the cribs, but I know there must be infants in at least some of them. A wet nurse sits at a rocking chair to our left, pressing a tissue against the skin just above her breast, wincing as she does so. She drops her hand, hiding the tissue in her fist when she sees me and Des, hastily standing and bowing to us each. The bargainer nods to her, while my eyes linger on the beads of blood forming where she'd been pressing the tissue to her skin.
"You can both leave us,"
he tells the two servants. The woman who led us here wastes no time leaving, but the wet nurse hesitates briefly, casting a fearful look about the room before she dips her head.
"If you need me, I'll be right outside," she says, filing out.
The door clicks shut behind her. Now that the two of us are alone with all these strange children, I'm spooked, every instinct shouting at me to leave the room. Almost as one, the children at the window begin to turn towards us. I go cold all over at the sight. Their eyes move to Des. All at once, they begin to scream. Not moving, just screaming. Even the babies are wailing. Des leans in close.
"I forgot to tell you. They don't like me so much."
"You don't say." He steps in front of me, using his body to blockade mine. And I'm not going to lie, right about now, I'm ridiculously grateful for my human shield.
"You're the one that wanted to see them, Callie. Grow a backbone."
I force myself to step out from behind the bargainer, scraping together the last of my courage. What had Galia said? That strange though they may be, these were just kids? Just kids. I take a tentative step forward and then another. They're still screaming, their gazes transfixed on Des. I begin to hum, hoping that in between kids' love of music and my own abilities, they might stop shrieking long enough for me to actually interact with them. All at once, the children's eyes move to me, some of their screams hiccuping a bit as I begin to glow, the tune I hum beginning to have a magical pull to it. And then I begin to sing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star." So sue me for not being inventive. One by one, the children stop crying and begin to watch me, mesmerized. I walk towards them, really hoping this is a good idea. When I finish the song, the children blink, like they're waking from a dream. I can't glamour Fae. My powers only work on beings of my world. but music doesn't need to be controlling for it to captivate you. Their eyes move to Dez, and they tense up again.
Be calm, I say, my voice ethereal. He means you no harm. I mean you no harm.
It's a tense few moments while I wait to see how they'll react. When they don't begin to scream again, I relax. At least, I relax as much as I can, considering I'm surrounded by a gaggle of creepy kids. A couple of them have dried blood caked around their lips. I try not to shudder.
My name is Calypso, but you can call me Callie. I wanted to ask you all a few questions. Will any of you speak to me?
Their eyes move to me, and they stare unblinkingly at me. I'm seriously concerned that they've gone catatonic again when, as one, they nod, circling around me.
Where are your mothers? I ask.
Sleeping below,
one little boy murmurs.
Why are they sleeping? I ask.
Because he wants them to.
This time it's a girl with a lisp that responds. As she speaks, I catch sight of two sets of fangs. I try not to recoil. Who is he? I ask.
Our father,
another girl says. A single father to all these children? I swear I feel a ghostly breath on the back of my neck. There is no earthly reason why they should know this, or anything else I've asked so far, yet they do. And I have a feeling in my gut that they have most of the answers Dez is looking for. Whether they'll share them is another matter altogether. Who is your father? I ask. They look at each other, and again I get the impression that they make decisions as a collective unit.
The Thief of Souls,
a boy murmurs. That name. Galia had mentioned it, and I'd seen it scrawled on Dez's notes.
He sees it all, hears it all,
another boy adds. 10 points to Slytherin for the creepy answer. Where can I find him? I ask.
He's already here,
says a boy with raven black hair. My hackles rise at that. Can I meet him? As soon as I ask the question, the room darkens. The bargainer doesn't say anything, but it's clear that he's not happy about my question.
Yes.
This comes from one of the cradles on the far corner of the room.
But you cannot bring him along.
The children's eyes dart to Dez.
Our father will like you,
a red-headed girl says.
He already does, another adds. He likes pretty things, likes to break them.
Again, that chilling breath is breathing down my neck as the children speak, their unwavering gazes fixed on me. Dez's shadows circle my lower legs protectively.
Callie.
The children tighten their circle around me, throwing glances over their shoulders at the bargainer. Earlier, I'd worried they wouldn't talk. Now I'm worried that they might be too fond of me. Do you know where I can find him? I ask.
He will find you. He always finds the one he wants. He's already begun the hunt.
The hunt? I shouldn't ask. I feel like coming to the other world has exposed me in exactly the way I feared it would.
He'll make you his, just like our mothers.
All right, I'm done. I have to leave, I say. Across the room, Dez begins moving towards me, clearly on the same page.
Not yet,
the children beg, closing in on me, their hands grabbing my dress.
Stay with us forever.
I can't, I say, but I can come back.
Stay,
one of the oldest boys growls.
She said no.
Dez's sharp voice cuts through the room. The kids recoil from him, several beginning to scream again. One hisses at the Fey King, her pointed teeth bared.
Stay,
several say to me again. This time they grab my exposed forearms, and when they do, the air in my lungs leaves me. I'm falling into myself, down and down into the darkness, past cages and cages of women, some who batter the doors of their cells, some who are lying far too still. Floor after floor of them blur together as I plummet. Then the world flips until I'm no longer falling down, but falling up. And then I'm not falling, but flying. I land at the foot of a throne, the wings at my back spread wide. My surroundings vanish, replaced by a forest. I'm soaring through it, and the trees seem to howl. I fly out of the woods, only to crash into my old kitchen, the room soaked in blood. My stepfather pushes himself off the ground, his body coming to life. Oh, God, no! He looms over me, his eyes angry. From his head sprout antlers. They grow and twist with each passing second. He stares me down, his face shifting until I'm no longer staring at my father. I'm staring at a stranger, one with chestnut hair, tan skin, and wild brown eyes. The man in front of me is covered in my father's blood, and as I watch, he licks a stream of it off his finger.
"My," he says, "aren't you a pretty, pretty bird?"
He and the room fade, and the darkness swallows me whole. Chapter 14. February, 7 years ago. My alarm goes off next to me just as it has been for the last 13 minutes. I don't have the energy to untangle my arms from my sheets and turn the thing off. Today is what I like to call a Hail Mary day, because nothing short of a miracle can make me get out of this bed. Most days are good. Most days I can pretend I'm like everyone else. But then there are the days when I can't, days when my past catches up to me. Days like today. I'm too depressed to get out of bed. I'm being dragged under by all those bad memories. The doorknob turning, the smell of spirits thick on my stepfather's breath, all that blood when I finally killed him. One of my floormates bangs on the door. "Callie, turn off your freaking alarm before you wake up the whole school!" she yells, then walks away. Somehow I manage to turn the alarm off before burying my face in my pillow. Not 5 minutes later, I hear the lock to my room click. I begin to sit up when suddenly the door blows open and in steps the bargainer. If anyone's out in the hallway, they don't notice his entrance.
"Get up,"
he growls. I'm still a few steps behind him. My mind's having a hard time comprehending that the bargainer is here in my room at this hour. Technically, it's still dark out, so it's still the time that he reigns. But a morning visit? That's a first. He strides the rest of the way to my side, and just from his expression alone, I can tell that he means business. He pulls my blankets off of me, a comforting hand touching my back.
"Up."
How did he know that me sleeping in 13 minutes more than usual wasn't just plain laziness, it was a relapse? He deals in secrets. I groan and bury my head back in my pillow. I'm too tired for this.
"You want me to keep showing up every night? You need to take care of yourself."
And then he had to go and say that. "That's emotional manipulation," I mumble into my pillow. I crave his continued visits more than pretty much anything else in my life at the moment.
"Deal with it."
I turn my face to the side and grimace at him. "You're mean." He also looks hot enough to catch fire in a Metallica shirt that hugs his muscles and a pair of black jeans, his white blonde hair tied back from his face. He folds his arms over his chest, cocking his head to the side.
"You're just now figuring this out, Cherub."
No, I had him pegged from day one, but since meeting him, he's softened up to me.
"Now," he continues, "up."
To emphasize his point, my bed begins to tilt, one side levitating. I start to slide off the mattress. I curse, clutching the edges of it so that I don't roll right off. All right, I'm getting up." I slide the rest of the way to the floor, glaring at him as I pad across the room. Des folds his arms, glaring right back at me. The man is remorseless. I open my drawers and begin removing clothing items. I move slowly, my eyelids still droopy, my body still tired and sore.
"This is never going to happen again, understand?"
he says.
"You're not going to stop living your life because some days are harder than others."
I look over my shoulder at him like he's crazy. It's not like I want this. For my mind to suck me back into the worst parts of my past, to feel dirty and tainted and unlovable. Even my annoyance is a pitiful thing right now. I don't have the energy it takes to truly get worked up over this.
"You feel like this again, you get help. Or you call me and I'll get you help. But from now on, you're going to do something about it, all right?"
Des says. His eyes are hard. I'm not going to get any sympathy from him. "You don't understand."
"I don't."
He raises his eyebrows.
"Tell me, Cherub, what do I know?"
He's baiting me. It's so obvious. I don't dare go on because how much do I really know about the bargainer? And how much does he really know about me? So instead, I glare at him again.
"Yes,"
he says,
That's what I want to see. Your anger. Your fight.
His tone softens.
I'm not asking you to never feel sad, Callie. I'm asking you to fight. Always fight. You can do that, can't you?
I suck in a deep breath. I don't know, I say honestly. His entire demeanor gentles with that confession.
Can you try?
I bite my lower lip, then reluctantly nod. If that's what it takes to keep him coming back, I can try. He gives me a smile.
Good. Now get dressed. I'll get us breakfast before you have to go to class.
Des spends the rest of our odd morning together doing everything in his power to make me laugh. And it works. I don't know how he does it, but the bargainer beats back my mood. As far as Hail Mary days go, apparently Des is just the miracle I need. Present. When I blink my eyes open, I stare up at an unfamiliar room. I look around at the deep blue walls, my brow creasing.
You're awake.
I startle at the bargainer's smooth voice. He sits in a chair next to the bed, his steepled hands pressed to his lips. On the bedside table next to him sits an empty tumbler. Where am I? I ask.
We're in my room. Back on Earth,
Des says. His arms drop away from me. His room. The one he hadn't been willing to show me before now. My eyes sweep over my surroundings, over the framed photo of Douglas Cafe and another of Peel Castle. Across the room, a golden orrery sits on a circular table, the metal and marble planets in our solar system hanging suspended around the golden sun in the middle. There's nothing about his bedroom that seems worth hiding from me. And then, amongst my musings, my trip to the other world all comes back to me. Air hisses in between my teeth, and my gaze snaps back to the bargainer. Those children! Des grabs his empty tumbler and heads to a wet bar on the opposite side of the room, pouring himself a drink. He throws it back, quickly, hissing at the burn of alcohol. He looks at his glass.
I understand why you crave the stuff,
he says. Carefully, he sets the glass back down, leaning against the bar.
God.
He runs a hand down his face.
I've never wanted to throttle children so badly as I did when I saw them grab a hold of you. Their fangs came out. They'd been ready to drink you.
I put a hand to my throat. They were going to drink from me? All I remember are strange, nightmarish images I saw when they touched me. I swallow at the thought of those images. Were these the prophecies that Galia had mentioned? I slide out of his bed. Des, they showed me things, I say. I rub the skin where they touched me, noticing the beginnings of several bruises. I saw cages of women, a throne, a forest, and a man with antlers.
A man with antlers,
the bargainer repeats, his face grim. Does that help? I ask.
Unfortunately, cherub,
he says.
It does.
He will find you. He always finds the ones he wants. He's already begun the hunt. He'll make you his, just like our mothers. I sit inside Des's guest room, my eyes absently staring out the window at the dark night. What have I done? I thought I'd been helping Des and Galia by interviewing those kids. A part of me had been proud of the fact that they'd talked to me when the bargainer had been so sure they wouldn't. But now, like Galia, I felt deep in my bones that the children's words hadn't been empty. That irrational though it might be, I'd just caught the attention of whatever thing Des has been hunting. Only now it's hunting me. I draw in a deep, stuttering breath. I need to leave this place, this house, with all of its connections to the other world. Hell, there's a portal a few doors down from my room. It doesn't matter if the creature lives in another realm, so long as it knows how to manipulate ley lines, it would only take an instant for it to come crawling to Earth. I began changing into the now dry, if salt-encrusted, clothes I wore here, and swipe up the few items that I came with. I can feel the same paranoia that claimed the royal nursemaid now crawling up my spine. I'm hooking in my earring when I hear the door to my room open and feel an ominous presence at my back.
You're leaving?
A thrill races down my arms at that silky, smooth voice. I turn to the bargainer. I'm not staying here.
Your ex will find you if you go back to your place.
His arms are folded, displeased. Who says I'm going back? I totally am.
Where else would you go?
I have friends. Okay, I have a friend. One. Temper, and she's probably furious with me at the moment for going AWOL on her.
You're not going back to their places.
It's not a command, just a statement of fact. So what if I go home? I would much rather face off Eli, who cares about me, who's hurt and angry, who I can control if need be, than stay here and chance meeting an enemy that not even Dez understands. The air stills, and suddenly the bargainer is at my side, his lips pressed against my ear.
If you go home, I'll likely have to steal you back from your ex, and that will displease me greatly.
I turn to look at him. At the moment, Dez, your feelings aren't my biggest concern. The bargainer stares at me for a beat.
You're scared of staying here,
he says, reading me. He tilts his head, his eyes narrowing.
You think I'd let anything happen to you in my house?
I swear the man grows bigger, his presence overwhelming. Judging by the look in his eye, I've offended the king of the night. Whatever. I tear my gaze away and head towards the door. A second later, the bargainer materializes in the doorway, blocking my exit. His hands grip the top of the doorframe. Unwillingly, my eyes move to those toned arms of his.
What if I told you that you couldn't go?
He says, his voice hypnotic.
That I wanted you to stay and use up some more of my beads.
I don't actually think he would try to keep me here. He's wanted nothing to do with me for so long that I can't really imagine our relationship any other way. I wouldn't believe you, I say. Now please move. Dez is staring at me strangely. He releases the doorframe and prowls forward.
Truth or dare?
I back up, suddenly nervous at the look in his eyes. Dez,
dare.
He breathes. In the next moment, he's on me, his hands roughly cupping my cheeks. His mouth crashes into mine, his lips demanding. Dez is kissing me, and God, is it savage. I kiss him back without thinking, swept up into the taste of him and the feel of him holding me. I'm supposed to be leaving, reclaiming my house and my life, but nope, it's not going to happen. Not while Dez is demonstrating all the ways my taste in men was spot on when I was a teenager. I'm backing up, and one of the bargainer's hands has dropped to my thigh, exposed by the high slits of my dress. His fingers move up and down the skin, up and down. My back bumps into the wall. Dez cages me in, holding me hostage with his body. My lips part, and Dez's tongue sweeps inside my mouth, claiming mine. His hand moves to my breast, and I arch into him, my breath leaving me.
"Gods, Kelly,"
he rasps.
The weight, nearly unendurable.
Dez's wings materialize, spreading out and closing over the wall around me. While I kiss him, I begin to run my fingertips over them. He groans, leaning into my touch.
Feels too good.
He slips a hand beneath my shirt and palms a breast, making really hot noises into my mouth as he acquaints himself with it. My knees go weak at his touch, and he slips a leg between them, holding me up. My skin begins to glow. I want to cry, this feels so right. Every one of his touches has felt right since the moment we met.
Truth or dare?
He whispers. Do I even care at this point? Truth, I murmur against his lips, refusing to give in to my baser impulses. He pulls away from the kiss long enough to glance down at my swollen lips, a hungry look in his eye.
What did you miss the most about me while I was gone?
He asks. I have to breathe several times to collect myself. His question is like cold water dousing a flame. His magic encircles me, forcing the answer out. Everything. I missed literally everything about you while you were gone. Dez stares at me, his chest rising and falling as he catches his breath. His hand slips out from beneath my shirt, and his knuckles stroke my cheek.
You don't know what your words do to me.
I wish I did. All this giving on my end, all of this taking on his, this isn't what healthy relationships are made of. He runs his fingers down my arms.
Stay, and I will tell you.
What I would give for that, to know exactly how he feels for me. I almost fall for it, just as I have everything else about this man.
I'm about to start nodding when I remember. Des is a fairy, a trickster. He collects secrets for a living. He doesn't give them up. And he's never been open to me in the past. He's not going to start tonight. I made a promise to myself after Des left my life, a promise to be independent, to not allow men like him to destroy my world. And now the very man who forced me to make that promise wants to burrow his way under my skin and into my heart once more. I'd be the worst sort of person if I broke that promise at the first sign of temptation. I run my hands through my hair. What am I doing? Really, what am I doing? I search the ground as though it holds the answers. Then, letting my hands fall to my sides, I push past him. It's been a long fucking day. I want my comfy PJs, a bowl of cereal, and some trashy TV I can fall asleep to. In front of me, the door to the guest room slams shut. But apparently what I want isn't going to be all that easy to get. I turn, exasperated, only to yelp. The bargainer crowds me, looking like he's about to rain retribution down on my ass. "Don't go," he says. Even though he looks mad, his words are soft. That in and of itself makes me hesitate. So close to giving in. "Why, Des?" My eyes move over his face. I can still taste him on my lips. "Why do you want me to stay so badly?" A muscle in his jaw feathers. There are 100 plausible lies he can feed me, but he doesn't voice a single one. I wait. And wait. His answer never comes. I sigh and turn around, heading to the door. The air thickens, the static electricity of it raising the hairs on my arm. That's my biggest cue that Des is displeased. I'm practically suffocating on his power. When I glance back again, his wings are out. They keep flaring and retracting. "Not displeased," I correct, "out of control. He's about to lose his shit. Half of me thinks he won't let me go, and a large, twisted part of me wouldn't entirely mind that. Instead, the heaviness in the air dissipates, and his wings fold tight to his back.
"Fine, cherub. I'll take you home."
Once we touch down in my backyard, Des checks the perimeter of my house, then my rooms, a manic look in his eye. I'm still too shocked by my surroundings to do much more than stare. I forgot I had a grown werewolf trapped on my property. My place is in tatters. As the bargainer moves through my house, his magic mends the worst of the damage. Shredded walls are fixed. My smashed table snaps back into place, the splintered wood fitting itself back together like a jigsaw puzzle. Shattered windows seal themselves back together. Des comes into the living room, looking agitated, his towering frame full of pent-up energy.
"Everything's clear," he reports, running a hand through his hair. "There were 2 Palidia officers parked down the street, but I sent them off. You should be safe for another day."
A day is all I need to hunt down Eli's furry ass and then rip him a new one. "Thank you," I say, motioning vaguely around me towards the damage he fixed and, you know, scaring off the supernatural popo who'd cart me off to jail the first chance they got. It's still surreal to think I'm currently on the wanted list. The bargainer hesitates, fighting to hold his tongue. I know he doesn't want me to be here.
"Stay safe, cherub," he finally says. "I'll be back tomorrow evening."
He crosses the room, heading to the door out to my backyard, not sparing me another glance. That shouldn't hurt. None of this should hurt. But it all does. I don't want him to go. My heart wants to give in to him, even if my mind knows better. Halfway to the door, he pauses. Swearing under his breath, he turns and stalks back to me. He wraps a hand around my waist and takes my lips savagely. I gasp into his mouth as he grinds into me. The kiss is over as soon as it's begun. He releases me roughly.
"If you want to see me for any reason before tomorrow, you know how to get a hold of me."
He backs up.
"I'll be waiting."
And then he's gone. Chapter 15. March, 7 years ago.
"Tell me about your mother,"
Des says across from me. The two of us play poker and drink booze in my dorm room while outside a rainstorm batters against the windows. The booze had been his idea.
"A little corruption will do you good, cherub,"
he'd said when he'd appeared in my room with the bottle, winking at me. I'd sputtered at the sight of the alcohol. That's not allowed.
Do I look like the kind of guy that follows the rules?
With his leather pants and inked arm on display, he most definitely didn't. So reluctantly, I'd rinsed out my mug and my water glass and let the bargainer pour us each a glass of really fucking good scotch. It tastes about as good as a dirty rim job. My mother? I now say as Dez deals out a new hand. I pick up my cards distractedly until I see the hand he dealt me. 3 tens. For once I have a chance at winning a round. His eyes flick from me to the back of my cards, then back to me.
3 of a kind,
he says, guessing my hand. I glance down at the tens in my hand. You cheated! He picks up his drink and takes a swallow, his muscular frame rippling in a very pleasing way as he does so.
If only. You're easy to read, cherub. Now,
he says, setting down his glass. He looks coolly at his own cards.
Tell me about your mother.
I fold my hand, taking a sip of the scotch and wincing a little when it hits my tongue. My mother's one of those subjects that I never talk about. What's the use? It's just one more sad story. My life has enough of them. But the way Dez is looking at me, I'm not going to casually be able to change the subject. I don't remember much about her, I say. She died when I was 8. Dez is no longer paying attention to the game or the drink. Those 2 sentences are all it takes to divert his entire focus.
How did she die?
I shake my head. She was murdered while she and my stepdad were on vacation. It was a mistake. They were aiming for my stepfather, but ended up shooting her instead. My stepfather, who was a seer, he'd failed to foresee it, or maybe he had foreseen it but couldn't or wouldn't stop it. Innocent or guilty, that night haunted him. Her death was why he drank, and his drinking was why. I suppress my shudder.
Where were you when this happened?
Dez asks. He still has a calm, lazy look about him, but I swear it's just as much of an act as his poker face is. Home with a nanny? They liked to go on vacation without kids. I know how my life sounds, cold and brittle, and that was the truth of it. Technically, I had everything, looks and money to go along with it. No one would suspect that there were long stretches of time when I was left alone in my stepfather's Hollywood mansion, with only a nanny and my stepfather's driver to look after me. Business always came first. No one would suspect that those long stretches of loneliness were so much better than when he returned from trips. He'd see me and fall right back into another bottle. And then, well, those are more memories I try not to dwell on. My skin still crawls anyway.
Why was anyone trying to kill your stepfather?
Dez asks, our game of poker utterly forgotten. I shrug. Hugh Anders liked money, and he didn't care who his clients were. Mafia bosses, cartel lords, sheikhs with links to terrorist groups. He brought enough of his work home for me to see it all. It made him a very rich man, and it made him a lot of enemies. Maybe that was why he had the bargainer's calling card in his kitchen drawer. A man like my stepfather walked around with a target on his back. Did you ever do business with him? Before he met me? I ask. I hadn't meant to voice that particular question, and now I find myself holding my breath. I don't think he knew him. The bargainer hadn't acted like he knew him when I first called on him, but Dez was made of secrets. What if he had known my stepfather? What if he'd helped him, the guy that abused me? The man that either directly or indirectly led to my mother's death. Just the possibility has my stomach turning. Dez shakes his head.
Never met the guy until he was swimming in a pool of his own blood.
The image of his dead body flashes before my eyes.
How about your birth father?
Dez asks.
What was he like?
A nobody, I say, peering into my glass. My mother accidentally got pregnant when she was 18. I don't think she knew who the father was. He was never listed on my birth certificate.
Hmm.
Dez murmurs as he absently swirls his drink, his gaze distant. I don't know what he's thinking. Only what I would be. That my parents sound like shitty people. My mother, who was interested in giving me a good life, but didn't want much to do with it. My father, whose greatest contribution was his sperm, and my stepfather, who starred in all my most vivid nightmares. Why don't you tell me about your parents? I say, eager to take the spotlight off of me. Des leans back and squints at me, a slow smile curling his lips. I can't stop staring at him.
We share similar tragedies, Cherub,
he says, still smiling, though now it seems a bit bitter. My eyebrows rise at his words. A fey king sharing anything in common with his human charity case? I find that doubtful. He pushes himself to his feet.
I've got work to do. Keep the scotch, and for the love of the gods, practice drinking without wincing.
He turns to the door. I don't bother trying to convince him to stay, though I want to badly. I already know he won't. Especially not after my little heart-to-heart. Sometimes I imagine the bargainer's mind is a vault. Secrets go in, and they don't come out. He pauses, then gives me a look over his shoulder, and his expression says it all. I may not have told him about how my stepfather abused me, but he knows.
For the record, Cherub,
he says,
if your stepfather were alive, he wouldn't be for long.
There's steel in his eyes. And then, like magic, he disappears into the night. Present. I spend over an hour cleaning my place up. There's stuffing and wolf hair everywhere, not to mention the claw marks. My coffee table and a side table have to be thrown out. At this point, they're nothing more than kindling. Should have asked Des to magic the rest of this mess away. But then he'd been so broody. I hadn't wanted to push my luck. Des. It's been less than 2 hours since he left, and I'm already restless to see him again. I miss his house, his macaroons, his fluffy guest sheets. I miss his smell and his touch. I miss him. It takes being back in my empty house to remember just how lonely I am. I'd forgotten that while I'd been with Des. I do what I can to straighten my house up, trying really, really hard not to think of the man who seemed like he didn't want to leave me earlier, not to mention the one who had destroyed this place fighting for me. I should just swear off men. Nothing but heartache comes of them. Heartache and trouble. Now, on top of hiding from the supernatural authorities and an otherworld monster, I have to buy new furniture because my ex broke one of the most important pact laws and visited me when he was on the shifter equivalent of the rag. Once I clean up the bulk of the mess, I turn my attention to my cracked cell phone, biting the inside of my cheek nervously. I've been putting this part off, but I can't any longer. Plugging it in, I check my messages. 31 texts and 25 missed calls. Some from Eli, a couple from various interested parties, but most from Temper. I don't bother checking any of them before I tap on Temper's number and, taking a deep breath, call her back. She answers on the first ring. "Where the fuck are you, girl?" she says, panicked. "I'm back at home." "Home? Home?" Her voice rises. "Your house was ransacked. There's a bounty out for your capture and your home?" "It's fine. I'm fine. I thought you were dead." Her voice cracks and I hear her sniffle. "I couldn't find you." Temper's a pro at tracking people with her magic, but I never thought she'd use it to look for me. "Are you crying?" I ask. "Fuck no, I never cry," she says. "I'm sorry I didn't call earlier. I really am okay," I say softly. "What happened to you? You just fell off the map and Eli's been blowing up my phone, but he won't tell me anything." I press three fingers to my temple. It's a long story. I've got time. I sigh. She huffs, her voice hiccuping a little. "Don't you sigh, you skinny bitch. I spent the last 24 hours thinking my best friend died." "Temper, I'm sorry. I'm all right. I'm sorry and I'm alive. Obviously, but sometimes with Temper, it's important to reiterate the obvious." "Girl, what happened?" she repeats. I can tell she's pacing by the subtle jangle of her jewelry. "I mean, the best possible scenario I could come up with was that you had some angry-as-fuck makeup sex with Eli, and that, oh my god, he probably went beastie on you, that's so goddamn nasty." It all comes out in a rush. "And yeah, he shredded shit up, and you in the process." I wince at that. She lets out a breath. "Don't tell me he turned you. Please don't tell me that. I remember how much the thought frightened you.
And if he has, so help me, Black Jesus, I will smite that hairy little shit and make a coat out of his fur. You feel me?
The line goes quiet, and it's just the sound of Temper's heavy breathing. Holy shit, I finally say. I clear my throat. No, we didn't have angry animal sex. No, Eli didn't turn me, and good Lord, woman, please don't make my ex into a coat. He didn't hurt me. Then what did happen? It's only when she asks for a third time that I realize I've picked up on some of the bargainer's bad habits, like withholding secrets. I glance down at my bracelet, which is missing over a row of beads. Can you come over? I ask.
Is the sky blue, bitch?
I give a shaky smile, even though she can't see it. Good. I'll tell you when you get here. Just like I promised myself, I fish out some comfort food and turn on a show that will rot my brain while I wait for Temper to get here. None of it helps. I'm disturbed by my trip to the other world. I'm upset by what happened here in my house. But most of all, I'm annoyed that I keep replaying every single intimate thing Dez has done since he came for me. 10 minutes later, my front door opens, and I hear the click-clack of heels. Temper stops in the entryway when she sees me, blinking rapidly.
My girl!
The two of us close the distance between us, hugging each other tightly. When we finally break apart, Temper sniffles, her gaze moving about my place. Her eyes linger on my restored table and the unbroken windows.
I was here this morning, she says, brushing her braids away from her face. Your kitchen table was broken.
That's, part of what I have to tell you about.
I'm all ears.
She sets down her stuff, then plops on my couch. A tuft of cotton flutters into the air as she does so. Missed a spot. Temper grabs my bowl of popcorn and begins eating it.
Where's the booze? She asks, looking around.
Usually nights like this always have a beer or a glass of wine to accompany them.
Crap, she doesn't yet know.
I'm trying out this whole sober thing, I say, gingerly sitting down next to her. She swivels to fully face me, popcorn forgotten.
Okay, what is going on?
I scrub my face. Way, way, way too much. Where to even start? Dropping my hands, I glance down at my wrist. You know this bracelet? I begin, lifting my arm.
Yes.
She has no idea where I'm going with this. Each one of these beads is an IOU. I run my thumb over them, not meeting her eyes. I'm in a lot of debt. She settles into the couch.
So, pay it off, she says, and now she resumes eating my popcorn. You have money?
She snaps her finger as an idea comes to her.
Or better yet, glamour that shit away.
I clear my throat. It's not that simple. I can't glamour this guy, and I am paying it off. That's why I've been gone. Now she squints at me.
Who's the guy?
I give a nervous laugh. He's the bargainer. It's quiet for several beats. Temper raises her eyebrows.
Wait. The bargainer? The same bargainer who nearly killed that teacher a decade ago? The same guy that's been linked to over 20 disappearances? The same guy that's always at the top of the Politia's wanted list because that same guy is always pulling mad-ass shit?
All that stuff is alleged, I say.
She snorts. Bitch, you and I both know that motherfucker ain't innocent.
He's a decent guy. And he kisses like a rock star.
You're defending him,
she says, astounded. It's complicated. He's a bad guy, Callie.
And this is me you're talking to. I grew up in Oakland. I like him bad. But even I think he's too naughty to tap.
I roll my lips together and stare down at my hands. She takes one look at my face and blows out a breath.
Oh, nah, girl, don't tell me you like him.
I don't say anything.
Shit, you do.
She reaches over and grabs my hand. Let me give it to you straight, bitch. It always ends terribly with the bad ones. Unfortunately for me, I already know that all too well. It's deep night by the time I eventually go to sleep, my mind too consumed by my thoughts. Earlier, I managed to fill Temper completely in, starting from 8 years ago. She'd always known someone had broken my heart, but until tonight, she'd never known the details. I'd told her about my deal with the bargainer and the mystery I'd gotten myself involved in, and lastly, I'd told her about Eli coming here during one of the sacred 7 days and shifting on me. Poor Eli. I'm no longer the only supernatural he's going to have a reckoning with. And personally, I'd be much more scared of Temper's wrath than mine. Outside, the wind whistles against my windows, shaking the glass panes against their frames. It sounds like a dying creature. The waves crash angrily against the cliffs, the whole thing so loud that once I do fall asleep, it becomes the soundtrack to one anxious dream after another. I hear those fey children in my head. "He's coming for you, coming to get you." Their hands hold me in place while something in the distance creeps closer, closer. The moaning wind is speaking to me, humming. "Fee-fi-fo-fin, I caught the scent of a sweet siren. Fee-fi-fa-thing, I'll pluck her feathers and make my birds sing." I try to pull against the children's hold, but I'm stuck. I stare out my window, and I swear I see a dark silhouette against the night. I drift, lost in the sea of my mind. The doors and windows rattle. "Let me in, siren. I'll give you wings to fly." I swear I can hear the voice right in my ear. "Just open your door and part your pretty thighs." My exhale echoes in the still air. "Calypso, it won't be long." And then the strange dream evaporates away. I rub my eyes as sunlight streams into my room. My nose itches as a soft feather flutters down it. Scrubbing my face, I glance at the clock next to my bed. 2 p.m.? I hadn't planned on sleeping that long. Then again, for most of the night, I wasn't really sleeping so much as gliding through one unsettling dream after the next. I throw the covers off me, causing dozens of feathers to flutter into the air. I make a face. Not the bedspread, too. Eli must have shredded up my comforter. I hadn't realized. I push out of bed, more feathers scattering along the floor. Ugh! I lift up a foot, peeling the little bastards off my skin, when I really take notice of the feathers littering my floor. Hundreds and hundreds of them are arranged in lines that arc away from my bed. I back up, tilting my head. When I see it, my blood runs cold. It's a wing. The feathers are laid out in the shape of a wing. Someone was here, in my house, in my bedroom. Someone stood near me while I slept and meticulously placed hundreds of feathers. I round the bed, my skin beginning to crawl, only to see another identical wing arcing from the other side of it. I put a hand to my mouth. My heart feels like it's going to pound out of my chest. Where did all the feathers come from? I lunge for my bedspread and yank it down, but it's not the comforter that's been torn open. The fitted sheet and the mattress are in shreds, right where I slept. And I know for a fact it wasn't like that when I went to bed last night. I can't wrap my mind around the horror of it, the invasiveness. Someone had practically reached under me to rip open the mattress and extract all those feathers. How could I not wake up? My breaths come faster and faster. I can't take in enough air. I back up, nearly tripping on my own feet. I open my mouth, the words coming out almost reflexively. "Bargainer, I want to..." Des materializes before I finish my sentence. At first, he has eyes only for me, and he looks so damn happy, happy that I called him. But then he notices the feathers, the fucking feathers which are everywhere.
"What happened?"
It's not even a question. It's a threat to whoever did this. The edge in his voice makes the back of my neck prickle. I'm shaking my head. "I don't know." He walks around the bed, studying the patterns. He almost manages to pull off looking calm, but I can see the dark outline of his wings. He places a hand on the mattress, gathering a fistful of feathers.
"They did this while you slept?"
"Yes," I croak out. My voice sounds embarrassingly weak, scared. I hug my arms across my chest. I feel violated in my own home, my sanctuary. Des drops the feathers and stalks to the other side of the room, checking the doors. From what I can tell, they're still locked.
He drags a hand down his mouth. I feel his magic then, building and building. Strands of my hair begin to lift at the static electricity in the air.
You're under my protection, he says. You have been for a very long time. Whoever did this was capable of sensing that.
As he speaks, the floorboards shiver beneath his feet and the glass panes behind him begin to rattle as they did last night. I hear one of them fissure.
No one, no one touches the people under my protection.
His wings flicker in and out of existence with his words. I'm woman enough to admit that right about now I'm a little scared of Dez. I can feel his fury riding the magic in the room. This is one of those moments when I have to recognize that fairies are very different from humans. Their anger is bigger and more ferocious than anything a human can conjure, and they're so much quicker to snap. Dez's face contorts into something merciless, and I'm pretty sure he's close to completely losing it. Please don't kill anyone on my behalf, I say. It's nearly happened before. He laughs, but it's angry.
All the beads in the world couldn't make me agree to that.
The bargainer comes back over to me, clasping my wrist between his hands. His face still looks furious, but the longer he stares at me, the more that fury melts away.
Now, cherub.
His words roll off his lips like honey.
The first repayment of the day. You're coming home with me, and you're not leaving until your debts have all been paid.
Chapter 16. March, 7 years ago. Dez sits on my desk, one of his boots perched on the back of my computer chair. He leans back against my window, sketching. Students walking to and from the dorms right now should be able to clearly see him. I live on the second story of the girls' dormitory, and my room faces out onto campus. Anyone loitering outside tonight should be able to see Dez's big, hulking man back. But they don't. And I know they don't, because if they did, our dorm's house mother would be up my ass in about 2 seconds tops. The visiting hours here ended long ago, which means the bargainer is masking his presence here yet again.
What's wrong?
Dez asks, not looking at me. He continues drawing, using the sketchbook and charcoal I recently bought him. The sight wouldn't be so strange if the charcoal and sketchbook were in his hands, but they aren't. Instead, they float in midair 3 feet from him, and Dez's drawing is coming to life without him ever touching it. His arms are folded firmly over his chest. Nothing, I say.
Liar.
I sigh out of breath, staring at his drawing from where I lay on my bed. Are you embarrassed to be seen with me? I ask.
What?
The charcoal comes to a stop. My cheeks are beginning to flush. This is humiliating. Are you embarrassed to be seen with me? I repeat. The bargainer turns to me, frowning.
Why would you ask something like that?
I feel my stomach plummet. He isn't denying it. Oh my God, you are! He disappears from his perch, only to appear right next to me. A moment later, his sketchbook and charcoal hit the floor behind him.
Cherub,
he says, taking my hand.
I have no idea where you got this mad, mad idea. Why the hell would I be embarrassed to be seen with you?
And just like that, my worry dissipates. I think I hate myself a little that Dez has so much control over my emotions. You always use your magic to hide yourself around me, I say. He squeezes my hand and I feel his touch all the way to my toes.
Callie, you have this absurd notion that I'm a good person when I'm at the top of the Politia's wanted list. There are bounty hunters looking for me this very moment. They're not the only ones, either. I have clients and enemies that would happily use you to get to me. Masking my presence is second nature, especially around you.
That made sense. He hasn't let go of my hand, nor has he left the side of my bed. It's like we are poised right at the edge of something, and the longer he stares at me, the farther I begin to tip over the edge. His silver eyes darken, and I suck in a breath at the look. I've seen that molten expression on a few men before, but they were never Dez. My pulse begins to race. I'm pinwheeling over the edge, falling into those eyes, that face. If only what I liked about Dez ended at that face, then it might be easier to deny what I feel for him.
But the thing is, the bargainer saved my life months ago, and he's continued to save it every day since. I like it that he's fucked up like me, that he's wicked and sinful and makes no excuses for it. I like it that he doesn't care that I might be a little wicked and sinful, too. I like it that he's taught me how to play poker and that I've made him watch Harry Potter and read the books. He hadn't touched them before me, the heathen. I like it that I get to travel the world with him every time he decides to take me on one of his bargains, that my room has become a collection of knick-knacks of us. I like it that he drinks espresso in tiny little cups and that I can share my secrets with him, even if he keeps most of his to himself. He's the highlight of my evenings. Scratch that, he's the highlight of my life. And I'm content to be his friend, but tonight, while he looks at me like that, I want more. Stay the night, I whisper. Dez's mouth parts, and I swear, I see a yes forming on his lips. He blinks a few times, and just like that, the moment's gone. He clears his throat, releasing my hand.
Cherub, that's inappropriate.
I'm an adult. He's pulling away from me, both physically and emotionally, and I know I shouldn't try to chase after him when he's like this, but I want to. For a brief few seconds, Dez had been mine, and I'm pretty sure I didn't imagine it.
You're 16,
he says. Exactly, the House of Keys thinks I'm an adult. I don't know why you don't.
You have day-of-the-week panties, Dez says. That means you're too young for me to stay over.
How do you know I have day-of-the-week panties? I ask suspiciously. He rubs his temples.
I should go.
He begins to stand, his impressive stature unfolding before my eyes. I scramble to my feet as well. Please don't. We're beginning to sound like a broken record. I push him too far, and he flees. The scariest thing of all, the more distance he puts between us, the more desperate I am to close it, and the more I try to close it, the farther away I push him. I'm losing my best friend, and we both know it. Dez drops his hands.
Kelly, if I stay, I give in. If I leave, I don't.
Then just give in. But he doesn't, and he won't, because despite everything the bargainer says about himself, he's an honorable man when it comes to me. And that really is the root of our problems. He might actually be the best man I know. Present. Well, shit. Out of the frying pan and into the fire. That's all I can think about on the flight over to Catalina Island. We land in front of Dez's embarrassingly impressive house, and I walk out of his arms without a word. I can feel him at my back, his gaze assessing me. The devious fucker is surely trying to figure out how to best approach me. He's going to have to keep puzzling over it. Even I am not sure how to best approach me right now because I have no idea what exactly I'm feeling. Annoyance, definitely. My leash just got a lot tighter. Anger and incredulity that the bargainer actually forced me to move in with him for the foreseeable future. Depending on how slowly he makes me pay off my debt, I could potentially live under his roof for the rest of my life. I ignore the spark of excitement that comes with that thought. My heart is obviously an idiot. Beneath all these frustrated emotions, there's relief. Relief that I didn't have to cave to my ego and stay inside a house that felt unsafe, or swallow my pride and beg this man to let me stay with him again so soon after I left.
I have no regrets, you know,
he says behind me, his even voice carrying across the yard. Ignoring him, I head up his stone steps and into his palatial house. Breakfast and coffee, I say. I can't be civil with you until I have some breakfast and coffee. I feel a hand on my back as the bargainer materializes next to me.
Then let's get the lady what she wants. I have just the thing for you.
Douglas Motherfreaking Cafe. That's what he was hinting at earlier. It's been years, I say, looking around the familiar cafe. The place looks unchanged, from the polished wood tables to the framed photos of the harbor to the glass case filled with pastries. When Dez led me to his portal room, I was more than a little reluctant to venture down one of his ley lines again. But when we stepped off the line and onto the Isle of Man, my opinion did a 180. Outside the cafe, the sky is dark.
It might be afternoon in Southern California, but it's already evening here on the British Isles. Des leans back in his seat, stirring his coffee idly. Something a lot like nostalgia tightens my throat. Des used to take me here whenever he got bored of sitting around my dorm room. His gaze follows mine to each detail of the cafe.
"Did you miss this place?"
he asks. "Not as much as the company," I admit. He looks almost pained at that. "Why did you leave, Des?" I whisper.